qualities that we encounter on the Buddhist path, things like goodwill and compassion, are intimately connected to wisdom, or punya in the Pali language. And at first, that might sound a little surprising. We may think that there are the heart qualities on one side, whereas wisdom is about the mind on the other side. And it's maybe something of a delightful discovery on the path that the heart and the mind are not so separate. In fact, it's really more of an idea in Western culture that we separate these. I would say in the Asian conception, which includes Buddhism, there is simply the citta or the heart mind. They're already intimately linked. The way I want to structure this session is that here at the beginning, I'll give some initial sense about how the wisdom and the heart connect. And maybe sometimes I'll use the foundational heart quality of metta, loving kindness or goodwill, to stand in for all of the heart qualities. And then during the sit, we'll explore that in experience. So I want us to then have the experience of that. And then we'll talk about it again afterwards from maybe a somewhat different perspective. So that's the idea. And then we'll have the Q&A and discussion time after that. So if we start out, we could say, how is it that wisdom is like metta or like any of the heart qualities? And probably there are more ways than can be named easily, but I'll name a few key ones. So one of the actions of wisdom, one of the things that it does, functions that it does, is that it distinguishes what is wholesome or skillful from what is unwholesome or unskillful. That means what's helpful on our journey toward peace, let's say, and what is not helpful for that journey. And the part of the mind that can discern that difference is called wisdom, or that function of the mind. And so then we can notice that once we're in the framework of making a distinction between wholesome and unwholesome, the mind tends to naturally incline toward what is wholesome. That is actually what's helpful for the path, right? And we could say also then that what is wholesome, I'll now use a word that sometimes people react to a bit, but that is what's ethical. That is the definition of ethics, to incline toward the wholesome. So ethical conduct is what? An expression of care for others and for ourselves. So we have the distinction that wisdom can make is what allows us to be caring in our behavior. So there, right at the sort of the first training that we take in Buddhism, the ethical training, we have a link between being wise, knowing what's ethical, and being able to then be caring. More immediately, maybe we could also say that there's this lovely phrase, seeing is loving. And maybe that resonates for you immediately or not. I saw a couple smiles when I said that. But let me say a little more. So when a person or even a mind state is really seeing for what it is, the feeling of that is that it can feel like warmth, like inclusion, like safety. And when awareness is open and non-judgmental, it is such a gift to receive that. There's this connection between seeing clearly and feeling loved. When I first met my teacher, I was introduced by someone who already knew him. And it was kind of a social situation at the Dharma Center where he teaches. And so I came there for the first time, and there were people standing around talking in the community hall. And I actually don't really remember too many details of that encounter, except that somebody introduced us and he looked right at me. And I really felt seen. It wasn't anything strange or unusual, but it was unusual in how it felt, in that he really looked at me clearly. And then later, when I heard the phrase, seeing is loving, that memory arose in my mind. It's like, oh yeah, he wasn't distracted at that moment. And he just looked right at me and said, he probably just said, hello, Kim. But nonetheless, if I could feel that as a feeling of inclusion and care. So maybe you might just take a moment to reflect. Have you experienced a sense of safety or warmth from a person that maybe you didn't know who was seeing you clearly? Have you ever had an experience like that? And we may also extend, maybe we can give ourselves that kind of experience when we meditate and really see clearly our own mind states, our own emotions, our own body sensations with a mind of clarity, which is a mind of wisdom. Can that feel like love, like being seen clearly? So then on the other side, we might say, how are the beautiful qualities of the heart? How are those like wisdom? That might even feel more puzzling, I don't know, but to be specific, let's consider metta or goodwill or kindness. And one way to think about the heart qualities is that there's a certain purity to them. And again, I know that word is doesn't always sit well with people, but consider that you can't really have metta while also being overcome with unskillful mind states, certainly with ill will. So when your mind or heart has metta in it, by definition, you don't have a very strong aversive mind state at that time. So the heart of goodwill or compassion or faith or confidence, other heart qualities, is relatively free of ill will in particular, and also of greed and many other limiting mind states. We're not really overcome by those kind of mind states at that time. And as a result, all those mind states like ill will and greed and delusion tend to be ones that contort the mind in a certain way, limit it, darken it. We may have experienced this in meditation. So, a mind that is in a state of goodwill or care is actually seeing more clearly simply because it doesn't have a lot of the negative mind states obscuring it at that moment. So, we see more clearly. And then, when we have a purity of mind and heart, we're not judging our experience, we're not resisting it, we're just being open to it. And non-judgmentalism and non-resistance are actually qualities of wisdom also. A wise mind can see things clearly like that. And to kind of make this connection a little bit more in poetic form, I want to read a lovely poem called What It Is by Erich Fried. It goes like this. It is nonsense, says reason. It is what it is, says love. It is a disaster, says logic. It is nothing but pain, says fear. It is hopeless, says common sense. It is what it is, says love. It is ridiculous, says pride. It is foolhardy, says prudence. It is impossible, says experience. It is what it is, says love. So maybe you can feel this sense of love being the one that's willing to really just see it as it is. Let it be what it is. That's a loving act. And it's also the clarity of wisdom. So just as a final top-level connection between wisdom and heart that starts to bring in a Dharma teaching, I'll offer that wisdom includes another aspect of wisdom is to have insight into the Four Noble Truths. And what are the Four Noble Truths about? They're about suffering and the end of suffering. And to practice with the Four Noble Truths to the point of having deep insight into them, having some wisdom into them, what does that mean in practice? It means we have to get close to dukkha. We have to know it, we have to see it clearly. And to see suffering or struggle or stress clearly is to have compassion. We have to only compassion is willing to turn and look at dukkha. So once again, we have walking a path of wisdom is the act of alleviating suffering. Wanting to get close to suffering in order to alleviate it is compassion. So again, once we start talking about these, there are ways in which each one can, there is a connection between them. I understand there are aspects of wisdom that we might not put in the heart space, and there are aspects of heart that we might not naturally put in the wisdom space, but I'm talking about the overlap today. I hope that will be meaningful for all of us. Wisdom and heart go hand in hand. Freedom and warm-heartedness are siblings. So that's a bit of an introduction. And this interconnection is found also in practice. It's not just something that Dharma teachers talk about, and we can see cognitively, like you might have in the last few minutes. So I want to practice. I want us to practice together with this to understand in our own experience how wisdom and heart have a certain overlap region, let's say. So let's sit together. Let's sit together. So finding a posture for meditation. If you need to move now to get into a different spot, that's fine. So allowing yourself to find your meditation seat. And if you're comfortable doing so, I would invite you to close your eyes. That's often how we do it in this tradition, allowing the eyes to gently close. Starting to sense the posture from the inside, the way that you're sitting. Perhaps you're sitting in a chair or on a cushion or a bench. Perhaps you're lying down, that's fine. Perhaps you're even standing. It's also a fine posture for meditation. And just, it's worth at the beginning of a sit to take a moment to balance the posture, find some ease. We're aiming for a posture that is both easeful and relaxed and also supports alertness of the mind. So maybe first sensing the spot where you're sitting, the seat against the chair or the cushion, your legs or feet against the floor, or whatever surface you're lying on, and really seeing if you can find a balance to that posture. Sometimes I even rock back and forth slightly or forward and back, just a very small movement to sense if the body can be as if it's resting in the bottom of a bowl, the way a marble would come to rest in the bottom of a bowl. And this is a posture where it takes maybe the least amount of muscular effort to hold ourselves upright. Or if you're lying down, you can sense the straightness of the spine. Softening throughout the body, so maybe softening the eyes and the eye sockets. Softening the jaw. Sometimes I imagine a small space between the top vertebra and the base of the skull. It tends to naturally soften the neck, drop the chin just slightly. Allowing the shoulders to find some ease. I like to imagine the shoulder blades sliding down the back. So the shoulders drop without rolling forward. Allowing the arms and hands to be at ease. And then all down through the torso area, allowing the rib cage to soften, the heart area to relax. We're always just inviting ease. We can't really make the body relax, but we can invite, soften. And down into the belly area, inviting the release of habitual tension. Even just a little bit. down into the hip area. If your weight is resting there, allowing yourself to really be supported by what you're sitting on, giving over your weight to the earth ultimately. Softening the legs all the way down through the feet. And I invite staying connected to these direct sensations of the body during the sit. If you're not used to that kind of meditation, that may be a little challenging or it may feel intense at times. I encourage you to stay with the body as a friend in the present moment. It's a skill that serves well on the path. Allowing the intention to be just kind of softly around the body as a whole. And we can turn now to include the mind more explicitly, particularly evoking this quality of mindfulness, of being aware in the present moment in a simple way. Aware perhaps of how the mind is in general. Is there a mood? Are you a little bit tired? Little anxious? A little excited? And just allowing how the mind and heart and body are at this moment. We're neither justifying nor approving, nor are we rejecting or curating. We're just being with things as they are. One teacher says, right now, it's like this. And having set up mindfulness, we now turn to the breath as a specific object, specifically the sensations of the breath coming in, going out, natural breath. Breath can be an easeful object because it's a moving object. Maybe like a flowing stream in a general way, and then it has some details to it that are engaging, all the little sensations. Of the breath entering the nostrils, the shift of clothing against the skin on the in-breath. Feelings of expansion. And then a softening on the out-breath. You may imagine or even sense that the breath flows more broadly than just the biological lungs, taking in and out air, but more like a flow of energy through the body, or even a kaleidoscope of sensations. Maybe the breath feels a bit like a massage. Massage of ourselves. It comes in, goes out. Also a simple way of holding or cradling the mind and the heart. Letting the mind touch into the breath. Perhaps on the out-breath, encouraging a simple easing of the body, softening, even as we're gently accepting of the normal aches and pains of the body, accepting of the flow of emotions and thoughts. The mind can invite some softening. The way we would softly listen to a good friend, just letting them express how they are without judgment. Can we sense now that this just gentle being with the body and the mind through the breath is a certain expression of kindness? To be deeply seen is a form of love. And how often do we get that kind of deep listening? Seeing is loving. Allowing our simple, kind attention to pervade the whole body. Allowing some of the surface tensions to just soften through kind awareness. Even if they don't soften or ease, we offer our acceptance of the tension. That too is kind. Kind and clear. So, as we continue to sit together, I'd like us now to shift into a bit more explicit touching into the quality of metta, which is often translated as loving kindness, but it could also be goodwill. Or friendliness. And it's just a little shift. We had had our clear and kind attention on the breath. Now we'll turn that kind attention toward the whole world and the universe. And we'll be doing it in the form of radiation. You can just follow along. So we begin by shifting the attention to the quality of metta just in the heart by bringing to mind a being for whom it's easy to feel friendliness or goodwill. I recommend an animal, your dog, your cat, or the bunny rabbits you see walking when you're out walking, or a bird, something simple. Not a dramatic shift, just feeling that kindness. And even as you have this being as the object, noticing what the kindness feels like in you, can you discern the metta in your mind? Can you even feel it in the body? Perhaps it begins in the heart area. It's okay to use a bit of imagination. Perhaps you can imagine a sense of warmth or even a feeling of a light. Candlelight, a lamp light, a star, something that shines. It can be tied to the breath, as we were just using. So breathing in, experience the metta getting stronger. Breathing out. We notice the way it can shine in a certain way, like a light. Breathing in simple kindness, breathing out that radiates. And as we feel that more directly, letting go of the particular animal or being. Sensing the kindness shining more brightly as we breathe in, and then feeling the way it radiates on the out-breath. Lamps don't push out their light, they just shine, so there's no effort. Doesn't need to shine very far. If it's not easy to feel the metta, that's okay. You can just stay with the breath. It's no worry. If you are feeling it, just letting this be a natural shining of the light. We can deliberately sense each of the directions to sense that we're not blocking it in any way. So, allowing the light to shine in the forward direction as if we maybe pulled aside a curtain, the light can shine out unrestricted in front of us. Maybe it just goes as far as the edge of the body, or maybe a little farther. The distance isn't so important, more that it's not restricted. We draw aside the curtain to our right. So, the light can shine out unrestricted. The right side. Into the back, allowing the metta to just extend out behind us. Simple kindness. Drawing aside the curtain to the left of us. Now to the front, the right, the back, the left. We feel no restriction in the way our goodwill can naturally radiate out. Also above and below. The floor and the earth are no restriction to metta, it just shines in all directions. Feeling the warmth or the brightness of this simple care. Which naturally shines through all of our own cells before it even gets outside. We are the first recipient of our care, always. Perhaps noticing a feeling of openness or non-restriction when we do the meditation this way. That non-restriction or openness is an expression of clarity of mind. We're not obscuring our mind with all the things we want and don't want. Feel that crystal clarity, metta. This is a quality of wisdom. Openness, non-restriction. So it's fine now to release the intention of radiating and just return to a simple mindfulness. Perhaps you could include the breath if you like, or just open awareness. Just let yourself rest in the connection between seeing clearly and kindness. Between wisdom and warm-heartedness. How is that for you now? I'll be ringing the bell in a moment to end the sit. It's a fairly long, slow bell, and I encourage you to stay through it and just let yourself come out of this meditation slowly. Okay. So in a moment, we'll change over to having the, well, let me say a little bit about a little bit more now about the connection between these two. Yeah. So as we noted at the beginning, in Buddhist understanding, there's not this separation of heart and mind that we see in some Western ways of conceiving. There's just this citta, the heart mind. And it includes, the citta includes both the affective, emotional expressions and feelings, and also the more cognitive side of the mind, let's say, including even the rational mind, but also other forms of cognition. And the understanding is that neither is superior to the other, and neither is itself a problem. Both of them are going to be needed to walk the path. And both of these aspects of our heart mind become more integrated as the citta matures on the path to awakening. So the maturing process kind of affects each side of our mind in different ways. So maybe the emotional kind of affective feeling side of our mind starts out often a little bit on the reactive side and or impulsive side. And we know about, the challenges of our difficult emotions, for example. And as there's a maturing of those, more often we can touch into the heart, what are called the heart qualities. So loving kindness, compassion, equanimity become more balanced, more able to come into that side of the heart mind. And then on the maybe the more mind side, we would think about, maybe we start out with a little bit too much of the discursive thought, the thinking mind or the rational mind or the skeptical mind, so the sides of the mind that are less useful for the path, but over and which are not in them of themselves a problem, but we tend to have more of that, and then we get a greater proportion of discernment, of wisdom, of clarity that starts to affect that side of the citta. And we get this integration where they come down to maybe the same root of some way of being with experience that is both clear and connected, both discerning and warm-hearted. It's really interesting the way that happens. So I think I like metta a lot because it can be seen as an integrating quality of mind. I think it's maybe the aspect of mind that starts to integrate the heart and the mind. Because metta is the quality that refuses to draw hard lines between people. If you've done metta practice, it's about breaking down walls that have been built, usually out of aversion. We may still have healthy boundaries when we have metta, but the heart isn't creating divisions. So I want to read a lovely quote from Ajahn Amaro. He was talking about the practice of metta, of loving kindness, but listen to how he brings them together. This is from Ajahn Amaro. It can be seen that the practice of loving kindness has both a receptive and an expressive aspect. The expressive quality of metta manifests in the conscious radiating of benevolent feelings toward others and to oneself, well-wishing, spreading kindness, sending goodwill out to every being, and it is like the out-breath. This is what we did in that latter part of the meditation. And then he says the receptive aspect of metta is like the in-breath, taking everything in and opening our hearts to each other and to the way things are. This is the radical acceptance, the not dwelling in aversion, the attunement to the reality of the way things are, that is also the life source of wisdom. So he makes this turn at the end of the quote where he says, the accepting part of loving kindness is the same as wisdom. They have the same source, which is attunement to reality and a willingness to accept things as they are. So can you accept, can you sense how deep acceptance of what is true is both an act of heartfulness and an act of wisdom? It's like that poem that I read, What It Is, where love is the one that says simply, it is what it is. And by the way, I appreciate that I saw someone posted in the chat. They had found that poem. So please feel free to have a look at that again if you want. I really like that, the way it makes that connection. So I know that it's often the case that people tend to see themselves more naturally attuned to the mind or the heart, in quotes. And it does have some measure of truth. I'm not saying that's not a tendency that particular people have to be more of a wisdom type or more of a heart type, these kinds of things. But given that these are just different aspects of the citta, which is spelled CITTA, by the way, for those of you who like to look things up, it might be useful to consider how we could move maybe from what feels more natural to us to the other aspect. After all, they're kind of coming from the same source. So if you see yourself as more of a mind type, more of a wisdom type, how is it that we could move toward more of the heart qualities? Or if you see yourself as I'm a love and compassion type, not sure about the wisdom thing, how could we bring in a little bit more wisdom to that? So see if this makes sense for you. So we'll start with how do we touch into the heart qualities through the door of wisdom? Let's say, how would we touch into the heart qualities through the door of wisdom? So yet another aspect of wisdom from what we've talked about so far is that wisdom is what understands what are called the universal qualities of things. And there are three of them. So there's impermanence or anicca, there's suffering or stress or dukkha, and then there's not self or anatta. And in particular, that middle one, when we begin to understand the universal nature of suffering in certain ways, that in particular, that all beings are struggling with this life thing, and they're doing the best that they can, that is one way that we can open the door to compassion and love and care. So remember, I'm not saying that these are the same thing, wisdom and love, but that they have an overlap. And this is one way that we can discover the overlap toward love and care by starting from the starting point of wisdom. So wisdom also breaks down the division between self and other because of anatta. Once we start realizing not self, it's not just that we realize there is no self, we realize there isn't such a difference between self and other. That's another aspect of anatta. So it then becomes as natural to care about others as we would ourselves. So there's another way that they come together. So I'll give an example to make it a little more concrete. So one way that we can practice with wisdom is that if we have some pain in our body, say we have knee pain while we're sitting, for example, one of the instructions teachers like me like to give is, what if we change from thinking about it as my pain? Oh, my knee hurts so much, this poor knee, etc. We change it to thinking about it as the pain. You know, it's a simple shift. that can soften and open the heart. When it's my pain, then I'm responsible for doing something about it. And I tend to quickly react with aversion. I make it a problem. I try to act and change things. But if it's just the pain, if it's an instance of a human being feeling pain, and why wouldn't you when you're sitting with your knees crossed, for example, your legs crossed, then there's more of a feeling of empathy or softening or a non-urgency about it. It's like, yeah, of course, knees tend to hurt when we're sitting in this position. And we can see wisdom might have a thought like, many people have felt this just like me. So that's a very nice connecting phrase, just like me. Other people have probably felt that. So the pain may still be there, but the kind of screeching desperation of it tends to evaporate when we have this thought of wisdom. So metta and karuna, compassion, can emerge in that space. It can be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's just the pain of a knee. So we have wisdom and compassion working together. You know, is that wisdom that's softening our reactivity, or is it compassion because our reactivity is softened? I find it not so clear. Either one could be said. So try it out for yourself when you have pain while sitting to try to make it a more universal understanding of the pain. It's just natural that human bodies get uncomfortable when sitting, and then seeing if that makes it easier to be able to sit with the pain, sit through the pain, breathe with the pain, all the things that techniques that teachers may tell you. And then for a more advanced practice in this same realm, we might be able to reframe some kind of an emotional conflict that we're having as the anger rather than my anger. So try it out again. And in fact, you know, if we're having an instance of frustration with our neighbor or our child or our boss or something, could it be, oh, you know, it's just people see things differently, and sometimes there's a frustration with that, or there's a realizing that, okay, they don't have the same understanding that I do about this. They don't have the same perspective. I'm still irritated. I still wish it weren't happening, but it's, you know, this is how it is for humans to try to live together or try to be together, try to connect, but it's hard to connect. And so I might still feel like I need to draw a boundary. I might still feel like I have to have a talk with someone, but it puts it in a bigger perspective of this is how it is when humans have to negotiate living together or being together or working together. And so it's also, we can maybe see other people's anger as simply a manifestation of a human mind state. If somebody comes to me and they're upset about something, yeah, I may need to deal with that particular issue, have a talk with them about that, use all my techniques of nonviolent communication, etc. But I can begin with the sense of, oh, wow, this isn't anger at me personally necessarily, or it isn't something I need to get scared about or offended by immediately. It's an instance of a manifestation of anger. Wow, that other person manifests anger just like I do. So there's a feeling of universality to it, a feeling of non-reactivity in the moment. I don't immediately identify and start fighting back. So, you know, I hope this gives a sense then of how, you know, anger, or it can be treated like pain. Emotional pain can be treated like physical pain. And again, we have, is it wisdom or is it compassion that's allowing us to do that? This is an overlap region where they're manifesting in the same way to help us meet experience in a way that's wise or perhaps caring, either way. So that's one nice way that they overlap. So then, I want to kind of turn to the complement of that and say, how is it that we could discover wisdom through the door of the heart? If we're more on the heart side, is there a way in which that's actually like wisdom? There is a way to discover wisdom through the door of the heart quality. So if you're naturally inclined toward the heart realm, this may be of interest. So that one, I'll bring in what I said earlier, which is that the heart qualities have a way of having a certain kind of purity to them. And they may, if we further purify them through practice, practice of the heart qualities purifies them. It is a purifying practice. They then manifest a particular form of wisdom. So when we are attuned to love and compassion and also joy and equanimity, it's often a feeling that we're willing to be with life and people just as they are. And in particular, this is where we can discover the wisdom if we're willing to be with the aspect of dukkha, their suffering or our own suffering. We can discover wisdom through that, through connecting with the Four Noble Truths. Sometimes the heart qualities have a way of not being quite pure, is the word that's always used, but quite true or quite genuine, in that we may have love for somebody, but it's mixed with a little bit of attachment or greed or possessiveness. We may think that we're loving our partner, but actually we're a little bit jealously holding on to them as my partner. And then over time, if we're Buddhist practitioners, we may tend to purify that love that we have for them into a very beautiful kind of loving kindness that isn't as possessive. We lose the greed associated with it, and they actually really appreciate that. I have to say, it's easier for them if our love is not mixed with attachment. And similarly, in the realm of compassion, many of us feel compassion and care for the world, either people close to us who are suffering or for the great amount of suffering out in the world right now. My goodness, we care about that. And yet it can be mixed with a little bit of fear, ooh, or a little bit of anger, or a lot of anger sometimes, right? How terrible that this is happening. This is unjust. Who are the people who are perpetuating this? I can't believe it. So it is compassion, it is care. We want the suffering of the world not to be there, but we've mixed it in with something that is a little, that is aversive, that is angry, or that is a disconnecting. We are drawing, we are making others out of other beings and putting them in a category that is other. And this is, I'm not saying it's easy to soften this out of our compassion, but it's very fruitful if we do, if we can learn to have a pure form of compassion that is not mixed with the ill will, with the aversion, with the anger, with the fear that can make us address issues like this in a way that is actually not as helpful as it could be. Our actions for helping the world are much purer and clearer and more effective when we have less of that aversion in there. So this is all an advertisement for doing the practices that help us purify our love and compassion. And if we do that, we have to look very carefully, don't we, at those ways that greed or aversion have come into our heart qualities. So let's focus on compassion, just to have again a specific example. So through compassion, we have become willing to sit with our pain, and we will discover quickly if we're sitting with our pain in an aversive way, it's less effective. So for example, let's say I'm going for that knee pain again, and I'm approaching it with a sense of being compassionate about it. If it's compassion, how many of you have been mindful sometimes of, I'm going to be mindful of this knee pain in a compa I really want it to go away. I really want it just to go away. And it's there. We have the desire for our knee pain to be better, but we've put in some aversion to it, right? So we haven't maybe clearly understood that what we're using is our sensitive heart to see that knee pain. But when we bring in the wisdom of, I'm just going to look at it and let it be as it is, and that's actually the most effective way to relieve it. We're bringing in wisdom when we take out the aversion in our desire for the knee pain to be better. Then we have this wisdom of just holding it. And you may discover that actually the knee pain goes away faster when we're accepting of it than when we're trying to do something to make it go away. And similarly, out in the world, if we're pushing, pushing, pushing for suffering not to be there out of it's got to end, this is bad, we're actually not as effective as if we just go in there and maybe just hold the pain of the world in certain ways, be there for it. open to it. Say, I'm here, I'm listening. Yeah, we do have to eventually someday take an action. But if we come from a place of, I'm gonna be with the suffering of the world because there is just suffering in the world. That's the first noble truth. There is dukkha to be in a human life. It's more effective, actually. Turning towards suffering instead of away from it makes the whole path possible, makes liberation possible. We can't walk the path without a sensitive heart that cares enough to end suffering in our own life and others. But we start to see that there's this care that is connected to the wisdom of acceptance. So I want to read a quote from the Anguttara Nikaya about a wise person of great wisdom. It goes like this: a wise person of great wisdom, when they think only of their own welfare, the welfare of others, the welfare of both, and the welfare of the whole world. It is in this way that one is a wise person of great wisdom. So how about that? A wise person is someone who thinks about how to bring about welfare. That's what they occupy their mind with. They're not thinking, abstract thoughts about things. They're thinking about how can I care for the world? That's what a wise person does. And similarly, a caring person who comes in and says, I want to find ways to really effectively serve the world and be helpful, ease suffering. They need to think wisely about how to do that. They need to have enough equanimity and dispassion to act in a way that's actually going to be effective and not just go in there and stir things up and agitate things. So I like this connection between wisdom and heart that can be drawn. So there's a harmony between heart and mind. Living in a way that's mindful and a way that's heartful, I think, are not so different. I could go on for a while about this because I'm very inspired by this connection, and I keep finding ways to draw. And sometimes I get into one of them, and then I can't remember whether I'm really talking about wisdom or compassion. So I hope you'll have some compassion about that. But anyway, it's there's a certain skillfulness in bringing in the wisdom and the heart and trying to unite them, the way Ajahn Amaro said, realizing that the life source of the heart and the life source of wisdom are both attunement to reality, attunement to things as they are, and then approaching them with an open heart so that we can see both the suffering and the end of suffering. That's the Four Noble Truths. Where's the suffering? Where's the path out? What does it feel like to feel the tension of the dukkha? And what does it feel like to feel the openness and the beauty of the freedom? And those go together. So maybe I should open it up at this point, and we'll have some time for Q&A. My understanding is that you can either write things in the chat, and I'll do my best to see that, but also you can come on screen, which I would really invite, and talk with me a bit. And then it's a little bit easier for me to see and hear and respond to you. So that's, but maybe before we do that, or while you're thinking, I'll mention that to echo what Faith said earlier is that I think you'll be receiving a link for a way to donate. And that is an expression of your care and compassion for the Dharma. The Dharma is able to continue in the world because we've had this reciprocal relationship between those who are conveying the Dharma and those who are receiving the Dharma. And once again, there's not this breakdown. I'm not sure who's doing which, actually, sometimes in sessions like this. But one way to express that is to give some kind of a monetary donation to support the continuation of these teachings so that the Dharma is kept alive for all of us. So thank you for that. And I do see that Victoria's hand is up. If you're willing to come on, that would be fantastic. I think you can just unmute. Hi,
Yes.
Victoria. Good to see
Hello,
you.
Kim. Good to see you.
Hello.
This is so healing and so fantastic. I'm so grateful. I just came out of a 3-day work on cultivating the emotional balance workshop, and I was actually very, it was, a lot of rational, a lot of learning and rational mind. But what was disturbing to me was that love is not acknowledged in that system as being a basic emotion. And I just kept thinking of in one of the breakout groups, one of my the person I was put in the breakout group with was saying that her most positive emotion that she ever felt in her whole life was looking into the eyes of her newborn son, and how she'd never forgotten that, like her son is now an adult. And I was just thinking, well, yes, I can relate to that totally, and how love is so important. And so, just to start with that Eric Fried poem, anyway, I just want to thank you especially for that, because I was feeling very almost kind of shattered by this experience of focusing on, it's sort of leaving love out of the equation. So thank you for that. And also, I keep thinking about the two wings of the bird, compassion and wisdom, but I don't know the source of that. I've heard it from various teachers at various times. I wondered, is that in one of the suttas, or is that somebody else's image, or because that seems to tie in so beautifully with what you were talking about today.
It does, doesn't it? That what she's referring to, in case others may not have heard it, is that wisdom and compassion are said to be the two wings that bring the mind to awakening. And that is not in the early teachings. It's not in the suttas, but I believe it comes from maybe some of the it's expressed more fully in the later Buddhist traditions, the Mahayana, as those going together. But I don't see, I think you can see that in the early teachings. It's just not stated explicitly that way. But clearly the Buddha was advocating a development of both sides of the citta, if you will. And I think we're going to need both of them to get all the way
Oh,
to awakening.
absolutely. The other thing I wanted to bring in was that I've been studying dialectical behavioral therapy for some time, not professionally, but just for my own my own enlightenment. And again, that fits in beautifully too. I believe that Michelle McDonald, who was the founder of DBT, is herself a Buddhist, so it makes sense, because she talks about, I mean, the foundation of the whole therapy modality is the emotional mind and the rational mind, and how if you bring them together, the intersection is wise mind, which it fits in again so beautifully with what you just said. So I just wanted to share
Nice.
that. It's just anyway, always wonderful to hear you teach. Really beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Someone else? And comments are welcome in addition to questions. That was more of a comment. I appreciated that. Let's see. I think I see. Okay. How can we be more at service to the world? Is practicing awareness and qualities of the heart is one way of helping the world? Oh, very nice. So, yeah, a lot of people want to know how to be of more service to the world, and I would say that, this suggestion that you make of practicing awareness and the qualities of the heart is definitely, in and of itself, a service to the world. Sometimes we don't realize that. Like, there can be a feeling like, oh, I have to be out doing something. And for some people, and yes, at some point, of course, that does have to happen. But don't discount the cultivation of the heart and mind as in and of themselves a way of serving the world. Why is that? Because maybe it's true on multiple levels. So at maybe a more visible level, the cultivation of our mind and heart will affect immediately our relationships around us. Everybody's in relationship with people. And there are many partners and children and others, living with a practitioner who would say that they love how, that the practitioner practices because it makes it so much easier to live with them. You know, you may not know the ways in which you're making life easier for those around you by practicing. So, in a very immediate sense, you know, just by becoming less reactive, by becoming better listeners, by becoming having a broader view of things, which all come about naturally through meditation practice, we actually become easier to live with and more receptive and more connecting with those immediately around us. So, there's that, and also our coworkers, our boss. So, in those simple ways, our practice benefits others in addition to ourselves. I would even go so far as to say it's very hard for practice only to benefit you. It's really hard. It does go out. But then, in addition, there is the waking up of the heart and the sentiment that comes about through practice, not always immediately. It's different stages, different things for different people. But it is true that at some point in practice, often we become more interested, more available to make some kind of action in the world. And I encourage, if you're more naturally that type, don't be too hard on people who are wanting to go off on long retreats, and because it sometimes comes about later. Like, for example, Bhikkhu Bodhi, some of you, many of you know him as a great translator of the wisdom texts that we use. He created a pretty much almost a whole set of the English translations that we now use of the Pali texts. And he had to devote himself quite a lot to that very cognitive task in order to do all of that. It took him many years. Thank goodness for all of that. And then at some point he said, "You know what? I'm going to found Buddhist Global Relief." You know, I don't know if you've seen his organization, BGR. It's a wonderful charity that supports people all over the world in all kinds of dharmic. They're not, it's a dharmically founded organization, but it does not necessarily require that of the people it serves. And I'm so glad he spent a lot of time doing this cognitive task and then started a nonprofit and is now serving the world directly. So I think going on a 3-month retreat or going out and becoming active in one's community are both ways that one can respond to the challenges of the world. We need people who are deep practitioners in order to carry that level of awareness into the world. So this is a roundabout way of saying, yes, just do the cultivation and let the mind or the heart take the lead at different stages in your practice, and it will be a wonderful way to be of service to the world, no matter what you're cultivating. Good question. And if I didn't quite hit the mark of what you were aiming for, feel free to ask a follow-up or other thoughts. I'm also curious about any experiences you may want to share. Like, I loved that one about looking into her newborn son's eyes, but in maybe specifically experiences where you have felt that wisdom and heart qualities were coming together. Maybe I'll start us off and say that I had an experience of volunteering in a hospital where I volunteered. Many hospitals in the US, at least, allow what's called a, what did they call it? Spiritual caregiving. And it's like the role that a chaplain, you know, an actual ordained professional chaplain would play, but the chaplain can't go see every single person. But they'll hire people, bring in volunteers who are spiritual caregivers, and we're trained in very simple ways just to respond to people's spiritual needs and go from room to room. And literally, you walk in the door and say, I'm a spiritual care volunteer. Would you like to talk for a few minutes? And sometimes the person says no, and sometimes they say yes. And then, you know, you don't know necessarily the person's religious affiliation. Sometimes you get a sheet and sometimes you don't. But you're just there to be of service, to talk with them about that aspect of their challenge that they're having in the hospital. And it's really deepening. I didn't really know how to do this when I started, but I was open and I had some training and I was going to try it. And what I discovered was, of course, what you often get on this is I'm sure I received more than they did, probably. But it was, it becomes a wisdom practice. Can you open to the suffering of whatever's happening in this room? And just be there for it. And they don't really need your advice or anything. They know they're, most of them are not Buddhist. They would know more about their own religious spiritual tradition than you would, not perhaps, but you can be there and listen. And that's what they really need. So attuning the heart to, I'm just going to be with this situation, however it is. I'm just going to open to it. I'm going to try to understand. I'm going to offer my presence. I'm going to offer my non-fear of what's happening with them. I'm going to offer my non-resistance to their difficulties. And that in itself is healing. And for me, it was also a great lesson in being able to sit calmly, equanimously with horrendous suffering going on in a hospital. So there's wisdom and there's compassion coming together. And they don't necessarily need you to say, oh my gosh, that sounds so terrible. How awful. What they want is for you to be there and say, wow, I'm here with you for that, and just be calm. So there's again this coming together of the ability to understand, be with calmly, which is really qualities of equanimity and wisdom, and to be that in itself is highly, highly compassionate. So, and to get all upset and very emotional is not helpful for a person in that state. So, yeah, and I see a mixing, as someone has commented, can we do that also without getting sad, without feeling pity, which is a separation of, you're there suffering and I'm the one not suffering. Thank goodness, we're saying in our mind, right? So, can we also bring in that quality of me too? With only a small change, I could be the one in that bed, not you. And so being willing to touch into, wow, the vulnerability of my body too. Yeah, that's not at this moment, So very beautiful. Sochi, your hand is up.
Thank you so much, Kim, and hello. I was, when you were saying the phrase about seeing is love, a memory popped in my head. It actually happened before I was even meditating. I wasn't meditating at this time, but I could just remember that one time I was coming for home from work. I was so agitated and the day had been horrible, and I was all like, up in my head about this and that or whatever. That day happened to be what do you call that? The day, anyway, the girl was hanging out little gifts to everybody. So put a little gift on my desk and threw it in my pocket or whatever. But when I came home, I was so agitated when I saw it. I just go, what is this nonsense? I just kind of threw it somewhere, like, it's, And but in that second, I kind of like caught myself and I kind of went, wow, you have to be really hurting to not even be able to just see a little tiny gesture of, affection or niceness and to just kind of just throw it away as if, oh, that's nothing in this agitated state. But I remember it almost just like really. I kind of finally just sat with myself for a little while, like, wow. Because normally, first, my first intention was just, God, Sachi, what a bitch. It's like, Jesus, you don't even. But then I caught myself and said, yeah, I'm in a really, really hurting state. And I think that was kind of the beginning of me thinking, wait, I need to do something. I need to find this. And then a little bit later, I found meditation and started meditating, but
That's
thank you.
beautiful.
Thank you. I
Thank
just
you. Yeah, I'm sure many of us have had that experience of when the mind is in an agitated state, we can't even take in the kindness of somebody else. It's just like, and yet I would say that that voice that came in that said, wait a minute, Sochi, what's going on with you here? I'm not sure if that was the voice of wisdom or the voice of compassion. I think they're coming there. It's the same voice at that point. The compassion says, wow, you must really be hurting in order to be in this, to just throw away a gift or toss it aside. So there's compassion there to realize you're in a hurting state. And it's wisdom that says, hey, I don't want to be like this. I want to have the wherewithal that I don't get so agitated in some way. So I don't want to project onto how your experience was at that moment, but just maybe just point out there was both wisdom and compassion in that wake up voice that came in for you. That's perfectly the realm that we're talking about today, is that overlap. Thank you.
But thank you for the beautiful meditation and the poem. Appreciate it.
Nice. Samantha.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for your session. That was really nice. And that was just to jump on. I forgot the name of the person that was just before talking about the experience where compassion and wisdom came together to help her realize that that's what she needed basically to move on. And then it made me think of another instance where maybe compassion and wisdom can come together to help you better yourself. And I think it's like in moments where you need to, when you need to forgive yourself, if that makes sense, because there's so much guilt, or I mean, guilt and shame is not exactly the same. It's still the emotion that you have when you know you did something and you don't really quite feel good about the thing that you did. And I was trying to find a solution when it comes to that feeling. And I think that's exactly it. Having a mix of compassion and wisdom, because wisdom will help you know that the thing that you did, which is a human thing to make mistake, like it's okay to make the mistake, but you need wisdom to realize that you can do better next time. But at the same time, it's so easy to hurt yourself because you've been doing something wrong and then you think that you're a bad human being and then you kind of spiral. So you have to be also compassionate. Because if you don't, then you'll just suffer endlessly, if that makes sense. So I think that's just another instance of where both of them can come together.
It
And
is, yeah. Thank you. That's a beautiful example. Yeah, we need both of those, and in that way, we can walk the path such that it's onward leading for our own progress. Nice, nicely
It's
said.
really cool. Thank you. And I'm grateful that we got to talk about it today because someone else was talking about DBT and I've been interested about it, but I didn't know that it was able to tackle maybe I want to say problems. I don't have exactly the words, but still I think that it's a nice thing that we're able to talk about those human emotions because sometimes we don't see the end of our suffering, but it all starts with sharing the wisdom with other people and also be nice with ourselves while going through this. So, yeah, anyways, that's it.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
RP, I see your hand up. We're near the end, but let's go for it.
Hey, Kim, just very quickly, I wanted to observe, I just want to just comment on the fact that I really liked how you talked about the like, for example, feeling anger or pain in the body, and you talked about calling it the pain or the anger or the sadness, because it's I when you say that it was, I almost imagine it like a cloud, a huge diffuse kind of thing rather than a crunch down small thing. And so, for example, if someone's been angry at me, rather than saying, "Oh, that's your anger, and you've been angry," it's more like, "Oh, the anger is here, and it's like a cloud between us, and it's like it's not blaming you for your anger. It's just this is here, this anger, and it's all, and it's like the choice is how do I want to relate to this cloud of anger that's here now?" And I quite like that, and I like the fact that when I call it the, it's more like a diffuse cloud, which allows like almost like more space to breathe into it, and then also bring in the space for a bit of compassion and a bit of reasoning. So I really liked the way you put that, and I will try it out next time. So
Give
yeah.
it a try. That sounds like a great way to avoid putting it on them and making it about that other person. It's just this diffuse cloud. Yeah, if that visualization helps work with the situation, that would be great. Yeah, give it a
Yeah,
try.
and also for myself, like so for example, if I'm feeling
Yeah.
it can feel so charged,
Right.
I'm calling it the. It's so it makes it such a bigger entity that's not bigger in
Yeah.
terms of more overwhelming, but bigger in terms of lighter and more kind of like I can observe it rather than it being something that's that's yeah. So yes.
Perfect. Nice. Thank you. Well, I believe we're at the end, so maybe we'll just wind up by reiterating that the wisdom and the heart can really come together. And I encourage whichever one feels like it's more natural, allow yourself to bring in the other one or realize that you are actually cultivating aspects of the other one and maybe allow them to be more explicitly partners in order to be our wings to awakening and reinforce each other. So thank you everyone for being here. It's really been a joy and I wish you all so well in your practice and